So for this fourth Sunday of Lent, our gospel reading comes from Mark's account of Jesus' life and his ministries. And Mark's been telling the story we've been following along. Jesus has entered the city of Jerusalem, and the crowds are starting to gather. Passover is getting closer and closer. And every day at the temple, crowds are gathering to hear Jesus, and some of the scribes and Pharisees and chief priests have been sneaking in to kind of throw their barbed questions at Jesus. And yet there's this one scribe who seems to be a little different, and I want you to focus your attention on him this morning. One of the scribes came near and heard them disputing with one another. And seeing that Jesus answered them well, he asked him, "Which commandment is the first of all?" Jesus answered, "The first is, 'Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind and with all your strength.' The second is this, 'You shall love your neighbor as yourself.' There is no other commandment greater than these." Then the scribe said to him, "You are right, teacher. You have truly said that he is one, and beside him there is no other. And to love him with all the heart and with all the understanding and with all the strength, and to love one's neighbor as oneself, this is much more important than all whole burnt offerings and sacrifices." When Jesus saw that he answered wisely, he said to him, "You are not far from the kingdom of God." After that, no one dared to ask him any question. While Jesus was teaching at the temple, he said, "How can the scribes say that the Messiah is the son of David? David himself, by the Holy Spirit, declared, 'The Lord said to my Lord, sit at my right hand until I put your enemies under your feet.' David himself calls him Lord, so how can he be his son?" And the large crowd was listening to him with delight. As he taught, he said, "Beware of the scribes who like to walk around in long robes and to be greeted with respect in the marketplaces and banquets. They devour widows' houses, and for the sake of appearance, say long prayers. They will receive the greater condemnation." He sat down opposite the treasury and watched the crowd putting money into the treasury. Many rich people put in large sums. A poor widow came and put in two small copper coins, which are worth a penny. Then he called his disciples and said to them, "Truly I tell you, this poor widow has put in more than all those who are contributing to the treasury, for all of them have contributed out of their abundance, but she, out of her poverty, has put in everything she had, all she had to live on." This is not exactly the reading you want to have to read when you ask people to come forward to put giving commitments in a basket. I had nothing to do with the fact that this reading was appointed for this Sunday. I think, aren't most of us already intimidated enough about making a commitment to church giving? We're wondering if we've stretched ourselves far enough and if we're committing enough to our church giving, or we're worried that we've made too big a commitment and will we ever be able to keep up with what we promised that we were going to do and what happens if we don't. And now we're going to be wondering about who's going to be watching us as we walk up to put our envelope in the basket. Earlier this week, some of our women were studying the Bible together, reading the text that we just read, and they had a conversation that led them to remember some of the old days back when churches posted the giving roster of the church so that you would see in descending order the names and amounts that every congregation member had pledged. I never lived through that, but I think it sounds absolutely abominable. I can't believe that someone would actually have done that, or maybe some churches still do that, until the women started talking after their Bible study and said, well, yeah, but you'd see somebody's name on the list higher than yours, and you'd be like, well, I can give that much, or I can give more than they would. They said, we're competitive people, and so we want to be on the top of the list. And I thought, well, as a pastor, little competition about who's the most generous may not be a bad thing, but we won't go there. Most of us are so private about our giving. I have to admit that the envelope that I put in the basket was well sealed, probably more carefully sealed than any other envelope I've sealed this week. But I took a survey earlier this week that got me thinking about this idea of who's watching more than I ever had before. It's a survey that a doctoral student at Luther Seminary is doing about financial generosity. This student is doing a doctoral dissertation on what makes congregations generous, what makes people generous. And so he asked a few local congregations to participate in the survey, and one of the commitments was that our council members would all fill out the survey. And one of the questions that the survey asked, and I have to admit, I was a little nervous about taking the survey, thinking that they were going to ask me to identify numbers and things. So I was a little anxious. But one of the questions was, who taught you about generosity? What a wonderful question that was to think about. So I think you would have loved to fill out the survey, but sorry, the whole congregation isn't being asked, just the council. But think about that question. Who taught you about generosity? You don't have to answer it out loud. I just want you to think about it a little bit. Here's another question from the survey for you. Was financial giving talked about freely in your household? Growing up, did your parents talk about where their money went? Did they talk about making decisions about where they would share their charitable gifts? Here's another question. Is charitable giving part of your budget conversation? And what dawned on me was, generosity doesn't come to most of us naturally. Generosity is something that we learn from other people, by the people who raise us, by the people who are our role models. We learn generosity by watching what people do, especially the people who are older than us. Jesus knew, I think, that people learn most from watching others. Even though he was a teacher of the highest order and people hung on every word that came out of his mouth, I think he told parables because he realized that we would learn way better from the examples of the characters in the stories as we imagined those people in our mind's eyes. But today at the temple, Jesus has this particularly attentive student. He's a scribe, but he seems so different from all of those other scribes who are trying to trip Jesus up and trap him in his own words or in his answers to their questions. This scribe truly wants to learn something. He sees in Jesus a spark of wisdom, and he leans into it. And Jesus is such a wonderful teacher. Jesus creates this wonderful space in which this scribe can wrestle with what Jesus is teaching him. So he's thinking and reflecting on those two commandments that Jesus gives him. There are so many that he studied out his whole life, and to him, probably all of those commandments had equal weight, and now Jesus gives him something new to chew on. So he's working out in his own mind, what does it mean for me to love God with my whole heart and with my whole soul and my whole mind and my whole strength and to love my neighbor as myself? And it dawns on him that loving is way more important than sacrificing, way more important than all those sacrificial offerings that he's been taught to make since he was a child. It's like a light bulb goes on in his head. He's onto something here, but this something that he's onto is challenging some of the learning that is so deeply ingrained in him. He needs some time to try it on and get his footing with it. But Jesus adds more input for his journey of learning, because Jesus sees that this one is starting to be transformed. And he has him, along with the other disciples, he has this one scribe watch as people are going into the temple and leaving their gifts in the treasury. And this scribe notices that there are people putting in large sums of money. And for most of us, those large sums of money dazzle us. We're impressed by wealth. But Jesus helps him to see a woman he may never have seen before, this widow putting in 2 copper coins. But we have to remember the context. He sees the widow putting in 2 copper coins just moments after he hears Jesus' warning, beware of the scribes who devour widows' households. You see, this scribe had role models, but perhaps not the role models that Jesus would have him fashion his life after. Jesus saw in this one scribe the potential for changing what was wrong with the system in the way the ruling scribes were running it. He saw in this one the potential for changing a system that overburdened the widows in supporting the system, the very system that should be supporting the widows in their hour of deepest need. Jesus helped him in his transformation of thinking by giving him something new to look at, helping him see what he'd missed with new eyes, so to speak. Because this scribe was open, Jesus became his new role model. I think from this moment forward, he's not going to model his behavior after these scribes who are so caught up with their own grandeur. He's learning a new way because of Jesus and what Jesus helps him to see. We all have the capacity still to be learners, still to be influenced by the example of others, no matter how old we are. Whether we choose to follow this role model or we choose not to follow that role model. There are role models all around us. This week, I have been amazed at the role models that God is giving to me. I think every single one of my friends who posted a Facebook picture of being at their crowded caucus gatherings, those Facebook friends are role models to me. Ruben Rosario, Pioneer Press columnist, who wrote this week about taking his son to the caucus with him, is a role model for me. An old friend whose husband teaches at the university with Ken was a role model for me this week when I read in our local paper that she is running for state senate. She is a woman who is my age. She has two children who are young adults. She works in a very demanding profession, and yet she threw her name in the ring because she wants to make a difference. Mitt Romney was a role model for me this week, not necessarily because of what he said publicly, but because he had the guts to say something publicly. He's deeply distressed, as some of the men in our Bible, or our men's prayer group on Tuesday morning. It's a busy day here on Tuesdays, women's Bible study, men's prayer group, and the men came out of their prayer meeting lamenting loudly about not necessarily the candidates, but the whole political process and how stridently polarized it seems, and how people are grasping at these polarizing platforms because they're hungering for something that doesn't exist, but they're going about it in such adversarial ways. And these men were lamenting, what do we do? I feel like I want to say something and I don't know what to say. I don't know how to say it. And I think God hears those laments, and Mitt Romney gave voice to his lament in a public way. No matter what you think of his politics or his message, I want you to think about what his children and his grandchildren will be thinking about having one in the family who gave voice for a stand publicly when the arrows came flinging his direction, because he had the audacity to speak. But I think out of all the models that God's put in front of me this week, I think that there is one that stands out as most powerful of all. It's a young man by the name of Ramsey Lee. He was part of our congregation in Hudson, Bethel Lutheran, for many years. We knew him since he was just a child. And this week in the Hudson Star Observer, as I'm scanning the letters to the editor, I notice there's a letter from Ramsey. And it floored me that a young man in his 20s would have taken time to write a letter to the editor. And so I want to read you at least portions of his letter. It's not too long, but I think one of the things you need to know in order for the opening of the letter to make sense is that Ramsey Lee had cerebral palsy from birth, and he's been confined to a wheelchair his whole life and has had severe physical limitations that he's been working with his whole life long. So listen to Ramsey's letter. Dear editor, I recently listened to an article on NFB Newsline, the service for the blind and visually impaired that provides for them to hear the newspaper over the phone. I was listening to an article that said a World War II veteran was denied the right to vote because he did not have a license. To me, voting is a fundamental right that should be enjoyed by all citizens who are eligible to vote. I cannot stress enough the importance of going to the DMV and getting a state ID. You are eligible to vote if you are a U.S. citizen 18 years of age or older and have been a resident of Wisconsin for at least 28 days. You also must register to vote, and you must not have lost the right to vote. If an individual is unable to drive or does not have a license, they simply go to the DMV and tell them they need an ID for voting or state ID card, and they can give it to them free of charge. And then he goes on to tell people exactly what credentials they can bring, whether they're servicemen or women or Native American tribal folks or naturalized citizens of the U.S., and he gives a lot of really helpful information and goes on to say, I want to make sure that all citizens who are eligible to vote have the necessary information to vote and the opportunity to vote. I know there are a variety of websites that people can go to if they have questions, such as www.myvote.wisconsin.gov. I'm grateful for our military men and women who serve this country. I cannot thank them enough. I don't want citizens who are eligible to vote to be denied the right to vote because they did not know the materials they had to bring with them. Ramsey Lee, my hero, this one who has for his whole life struggled with disability, takes the time to write so that none of us will be disabled from our right to vote. He's teaching me something about how I want to live. And so many people have been my role models about so many things. But as for my role models for generosity, that modeling started at home when every week of my life I saw my father get out the checkbook and write a check and put it into an offering envelope and bring that offering envelope to church. And even now as an adult, if I'm at my father's house on a Sunday morning, I will witness that same behavior. I saw my dad supporting his alma mater so that students who came after him would have a leg up in their education process because education is something he values. I saw my dad donate trees from his woods, from seedlings that he had planted to his community to make it a more beautiful place. His generosity has influenced my life more ways than I can count, but I've never really stopped to think about how powerful that influence was on me. But now that I've left my parents' household, I still have people who influence me to generosity in incredible ways. I'll never forget one of my first visits to a congregation member from Redeemer who was at St. John's Hospital. I was walking in and I saw this big thing on the wall, like a brass piece of art with names in it. And I saw the name of a person I know who lives in the, like, down by the river close to the airport as a donor for the St. John's Hospital. And my heart just leapt to think that this one I know who will never doctor in Maplewood, Minnesota, gave money to support the building of that hospital. And I've had thousands of experiences of being touched by the knowledge of other people's generosity. I think anytime I witness people making contributions to support organizations or to support and promote values that they hold dear, that impacts me. And now you all have become my role models because you're showing me how you live out your love of God and your love of neighbor in wildly generous acts of service and giving. So who's looking when we come to bring our envelopes today? I'm looking because you're showing me how I want to live. You're showing me how I want to be. And my prayer is that you also will have powerful role models who show you how to live out your love for God and your love for one another with your whole heart, your whole soul, your whole mind, and all of your strength, because that, my friends, is how our God loves us with all that he has. So thank you for letting me watch.